This is Inland Edition. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If there's one constant in medicine, it's an ongoing need for blood donations. And with people worried about being exposed or exposing others to the coronavirus, some people are cautious about giving blood, even when they can do so safely. We decided to find out more from Dr. Joe Chaffin. He's the Chief Medical Officer with Lifestream Blood Bank. Welcome.
Thank you, Lillian. It's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time and sharing a little bit more about blood banks. I know that the blood bank is located right here in San Bernardino. Mm-hmm. And blood banks, of course, are always in need and in search of blood donations. But during this COVID-19 situation, how has that changed or increased? Or tell me the effects.
It's been a very interesting journey for us, Lillian. I think we all would say that these times have been unusual and stressful in many ways and very, very different. And I think all of us feel like we've learned things that we never intended or wanted to learn necessarily. That has been absolutely true in blood banking as well. What we saw in the early days of the pandemic was a scenario where, as you recall, the federal government was somewhat minimizing the risk, and that was the best information that appeared to be out there. And there was a real call for people to donate blood with the anticipation that blood donations would be down and that we would be short of blood. What ended up happening is at the same time that people were coming to us to donate blood, which was great, we were just so honored for people to join us and donate blood, well, surgeries and different procedures at hospitals were actually ramping down as our hospitals in Southern California. And to be clear, Lillian, we serve hospitals all across Southern California, especially the Inland Empire, but we're all across this entire region.
Okay.
But what we saw is hospitals start to decrease the amount of blood that they used. And we had a period there of about 3 or 4 weeks or so where we had more blood than was necessary. And it was a very interesting time.
Wow.
But now that things are getting to a point where hospitals are starting to ramp back up with surgeries, because of the way that blood is kept on the shelf and it only has a limited shelf life, some of that blood that was donated 3, 4, 5 weeks ago is getting towards the point where it's starting to be ready to expire. And just as surgeries are ramping up, we're in a situation now where we're going to be in need again very shortly. In fact, we already are, as hospitals are ramping up to have people come in and donate blood. So it's been an up and down ride for us, I guess is how I would describe it.
Very interesting. What is the blood shelf life? What did you say it was?
Well, for the different blood products, there are different shelf lives for each component. The one that everyone thinks about is the red blood cell, and that's the main thing that we make when someone donates blood, and that has a shelf life of 42 days, so roughly 6 weeks. Mm. Platelets, on the other hand, Lillian, have a very short shelf life of only 5 days, so they just don't hang around very long. They don't live all that long, so we can't keep them on the shelf for very long. So as you can imagine, as the need comes and goes with platelets, that can be a very much a day-to-day thing, and we're seeing that right now as surgeries are ramping up and people are starting to drive around more and people are having traumas and things like that. Those platelets are definitely needed, and we feel that.
Got it. Let me reintroduce our guest is Dr. Joe Chaffin. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Lifestream Blood Bank. The blood bank is located here in San Bernardino. Let's break it down a little. For someone who has never donated blood, can you take me through the process of what it's like from beginning to end?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. So the process is very tightly monitored and regulated by the Food and Drug Administration and the State of California Public Health Department, as well as it's actually kind of an international organization called AABB that all blood centers in California have to operate under their standards. So everything has a purpose and is very regulated. The short version, I'll try to make it as short as I can, easiest way to do this is to go to our website, which is lstream.org. So it's Lifestream shortened to just the first letter, lstream.org. And on there, you can follow through with instructions on basically how to make an appointment, how to figure out where to go and what center to visit, what place to visit in order to donate your blood. The good thing about that is that while you're there, actually, on the day that you're coming to donate, you can fill out the entire questionnaire and read all the materials that we need you to read before you even get to one of our centers or one of our mobile drives. And we really encourage that because in this day and age, I think it's important for all of us, and we take this seriously as well, to try and minimize the exposure to other people. Now, blood centers, we take precautions, which I'm sure we'll talk about in just a few minutes, but at the same time, if you can do a bunch of stuff before you even arrive at a place, to get that kind of out of the way, why not do it? And so we strongly encourage that. The questions that people answer, Lillian, are very detailed. They're designed to protect the donor. In other words, we want to be as sure as we can that people are safe to donate blood, meaning if, for example, if you had an issue with your heart or your lungs, it might not be the greatest idea for you to donate blood. And we kind of walk you through that process as well. So we want to protect donors kind of from themselves, from their own good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, of course, we want to protect the patients who are on the other end of that. And that's why we ask a whole lot of very detailed questions about things that have occurred in someone's life, such as, have you had a blood transfusion from someone else in the past year? There are a whole wide variety of potential things that could put a patient who's receiving someone's blood at risk. So someone goes through all those questions, either before they arrive at one of our centers, or they can do it once they get at our centers. It's all done very privately. Then one of our trained staff members goes through those questions with the donor to make sure that if there's anything that needs to be cleared up, we talk them through that. We, in most cases, people qualify. Sure, some people don't, but the vast majority of people qualify. And then we make sure that people, again, are safe to donate, meaning we want to make sure, A, that they have enough blood to share with someone else. So we do a little finger poke, basically take a tiny sample of blood and run it through a machine that tells us whether or not someone has enough blood to share, basically.
Wow.
We run a test called a hemoglobin, which tells us, is this person anemic or not? In other words, do they have enough blood to give to someone else?
Hmm.
We also check blood pressures. We check pulses. We check making sure that people are breathing well, of course, and the temperature. Now, the temperature is something that I want to make sure that we're clear on, because there are specific regulations for us and every blood bank. In order to donate blood, someone has to have a temperature of less than 99.5. In terms of the coronavirus, the COVID thing, we are actually checking people's temperatures twice. We're checking them before they ever come into our centers. That's typically with an infrared thermometer that's designed to keep people that have even a little bit of a temperature increase from ever entering our center. And that's for the safety of our staff as well as for the safety of the other donors. But we also, at the time of going through all these questions, we check someone's temperature as well. And as long as it's below 99.5, then someone would be eligible to donate. And you hanging with me, Lillian? I'm throwing a lot of info at you.
I am here with you.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm not speaking too much jargon. Once someone gets through that whole process, then they go to either donate a unit of whole blood, which is the kind of donation that, again, most people are very familiar with. You sit in a comfortable chair. We put a needle into your arm, and over the span of about 8 to 10 minutes or so, we collect the equivalent of a pint of blood into a sterile bag. That's a sterile needle. All the equipment is only used for one donor. So we make as sure as we can that, again, it's one donor, one batch of equipment. Now, some other donors, Lillian, I mentioned platelets earlier. Some other donors are really well qualified by their blood type. For example, people that are blood group A, people that are blood group B, and sometimes people that are blood group AB are really well qualified to give platelets. And that's a different process. You still have the needle put in your arm, but you spend typically in the range of 40 minutes to maybe slightly more than 40 minutes connected to a really elegant and sophisticated machine that takes your blood, harvests the product that we're looking for, in other words, platelets and sometimes plasma, and gives everything else back to you. It's a super elegant process, and it's really very sophisticated, as I said. People that donate platelets and plasma, because again, remember, with platelets, we can only keep them for 5 days, they're able to donate much more often than people who donate whole blood, and we have an enormous number of people that are spectacularly dedicated to donating platelets. They can do it up to 24 times a year as opposed to a whole blood donation where you can only do it once every 8 weeks. So that works out to, between 4 and 5 times a year, something like that. But again, the idea behind that process, which is called apheresis, is that we're only taking the product that we need, and everything else, including all your red blood cells, goes back to you. That was kind of it in a very large nutshell, Lillian. I talked for a little longer than I'd intended there. I'm sorry for that.
No, please don't apologize. It was great information. I'm going to ask you more details. So after they take the blood, whether it's the platelets or the blood itself, then they are done, they leave, and they're good?
That's an important point, and I'm glad you brought it up. So it's very important to us and really to every blood center that we take really good care of our donors. And so we While donors are in the chair, we're instructing them on ways to try and minimize any potential complication from donating blood. And the main complication, the most common one, which doesn't happen very often, but it does happen from time to time, is lightheadedness, someone feeling dizzy. The reason that we screen people up front is we try and minimize that possibility prior to them ever having a needle put in their arm. After they donate, they're required to stay in our canteen for a minimum of 10 minutes. Okay. And while they're in our canteen, they get fed. We have snacks, we have drinks, and we have people looking out for them to try and make sure that they're doing well and are okay. Again, the vast, vast, vast majority of people do well and have no problems whatsoever, but we're prepared to manage the few that do have an issue with dizziness. And that's very important to recognize.
Our guest is Dr. Joe Chaffin. He is the Chief Medical Officer for Lifestream Blood Bank. Now, the mobile units would drive to different locations, and you can do the screening there or the donation blood there. Is that right?
And with those mobiles, you can also do the online questionnaire so that, you know, again, you can have everything done before you even arrive at the mobile.
All right. I'm going to go through, as I was perusing your website, and I looked at donor frequently asked questions. The kind of obvious that's there is, why should I donate blood? Pretty obvious.
It is, but, you know, it's really important to always talk about this. The issue of donation, the voluntary donation of blood is really, it forms the backbone of saving literally hundreds of thousands of people every year in the United States. In fact, it may be millions. It's hard to overstate it, because the United States blood supply, not just in Southern California, but the United States blood supply is built on the backbone of incredibly dedicated donors, incredibly dedicated people who volunteer their time, who give selflessly in order to save someone that they probably will never meet.
Sure.
There are a million and one different things that blood gets used for. The things that people think about, of course, are things like cancer treatments and people that are having surgeries, traumas especially, that's a very big deal. But organ transplants, babies who need transfusions, all kinds of things that come up all over Southern California and really all around the world. And like I said, the backbone of our response to saving those patients is the ability of people to come in and volunteer their time. I will say this, Lillian, and I will say this into my dying breath. I've been doing blood banking for nearly 30 years, and I am 100% convinced that people that donate blood and who try to donate blood are the best people in the world. I am convinced of that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
We're also a little biased, but let's go on.
I am totally biased. There's absolutely true.
I'm Lillian Vasquez, and this is Inland Edition. Today, we're talking about blood donations with Dr. Joe Chaffin, Chief Medical Officer with Lifestream Blood Bank. After a short break, we'll have more answers to frequently asked questions about donating blood. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. You're listening to KVCR. I'm Lillian Vasquez, and this is Inland Edition. Let's get back to my interview with Chief Medical Officer from Lifestream, Dr. Joe Chaffin. On your frequently asked questions, it's also, how will I feel after the duration, and is it safe or does it hurt?
So I mentioned that the needle goes into someone's arm. So by definition, there's going to be a bit of a pinch there. But we have phlebotomists and nurses who are involved in doing this that are very, very skilled and very, very experienced in doing so. In fact, just yesterday, I personally donated blood at our Riverside Center. And I can tell you that I felt it, of course, because you feel it when a needle goes in your arm. But oftentimes the anticipation is worse than the actual discomfort itself. So yes, is blood donation safe? It is safe in terms of everything that we do to keep our donors safe. And as I mentioned, the single-use equipment, we're not putting a needle into your arm that's ever seen anybody else, of course. I hope that goes without saying in 2020, but that's absolutely true.
Right. Nothing wrong with repeating it.
Yep.
It says on your questions, is there anything special I need to know before my donation?
Yeah, and that's really important. I mentioned earlier that the vast majority of people do really, really well when they donate blood, and that is 100% true. But there are some things that you can do before you donate that will increase your odds of doing really, really well.
Okay.
One of the things that we see sometimes when people come in, especially when they come in the morning, is that when they donate and maybe after they donate, they feel a little dizzy, and we talk to them and we ask them, when was the last time you ate? And they say, yesterday afternoon sometime. And it's like, wow, that, you know, eating a good meal prior to donating, there is nothing wrong with that. That is a very good thing, in fact. I tell people to eat the way you normally do. You don't have to go crazy with it, but it is not the greatest idea to come in and donate on a completely empty stomach. And further, it's not a good idea to donate when you're fasting. So absolutely, you should eat. You should also drink. And in fact, drinking, in terms of drinking clear fluids, preferably non-caffeinated fluids, it's not 100%. We certainly don't say don't have your morning coffee, because I know how people are when they don't have their morning coffee. they might not be very popular even with themselves if they don't drink their morning coffee. That's okay. But definitely increase your water intake if you can, both before and after your donation. That will really help you in terms of making sure that you're well enough hydrated. But again, you're going to lose a little fluid when we take blood from you, so that you can compensate for that. We want to make sure that you're not dehydrated.
Makes sense.
And then the very last thing, Lillian, is both during the donation and after, what we talk to donors about is a really simple exercise process, and they'll get some of this instruction when they come in. But what we found, and this has actually been studied in the literature, is that when people are donating blood, the muscles in their legs, like contract your muscles and then let them go, contract your muscles and let them go. What I tell people is from your toes all the way up to your backside, just do that regularly. And it kind of forces the blood from your legs back into the core of your body. And again, it's another way that we make sure that you've got enough blood rolling around, that you're not going to get dizzy as a result of that.
Well, thanks for that. I think you mentioned it earlier, but how often can one donate?
So again, it partly depends on what you're donating. For people who are donating whole blood, the minimum interval between donations is 56 days. So if you're gonna donate a unit of whole blood, you can't donate more often than every 8 weeks, 56 days. If you're donating platelets, on the other hand, a platelet product can be donated up to 24 times a year. We typically don't let people do it more than once a week, but you can kind of do the math there. And we do limit them, and this is by regulation, to no more than 24 platelet donations within a rolling 12-month period. In other words, it's not a January to December time frame. It's from this time last year, you can't have donated more than 24 times.
Got it. I want to ask about the different types of blood, you know, O type, O positive, B negative, or can you just share the different blood types with me? And which one is the best one to have and the worst one to have?
Well, your second part is an interesting question. I'll get to that in a second. So there are four main blood types, and they are the things that most people learned in high school. They are group O, group A, group B, and group AB. The order that I just set them in is the order of how common they are. Group O is the most common, really, in any racial group. A is second, B is third, and AB is always the least common. On the other hand, your blood type, and most people are well aware of this, if you've ever watched any TV show that has medical stuff in it ever, you've heard someone probably screaming, I need 6 units of O neg to the emergency room.
Right.
That. And so it's that whole negative positive thing. The negative positive goes to what we call the Rh blood group system. So every one of those four blood types that I told you about before, O, A, B, and AB, are broken down into two separate groups. So in other words, some people are O positive, meaning that they are Rh positive in addition to blood group O, and it's a different protein. There's a whole lot to it, but I'll just keep it simple. So you either have that protein that makes you Rh positive or you don't. So you're either Rh positive or Rh negative. Most people are Rh positive. In fact, the vast majority are Rh positive. It goes from about 85% of Caucasians up to all the way to 99%+ that are positive in Asian. Those of Hispanic origin are somewhere in the middle of that, African Americans in the middle as well. But it's always at least 85% of the population. So that leaves just a small proportion of people that are Rh negative. So for example, if you look at group O people, about almost half, a little shy of half the people in our donor area are going to be O positive. It's 40-some%. But only about 5-6% of people in our area are going to be O negative. And the same breakdown is going to be true for A's and B's and AB's. In other words, the positive, A positive, is always going to be more common than A negative, et cetera. The positive-negative difference is important because blood donors who are group O positive, for example, because of the way those blood groups work, and I happen to be O negative, me myself, so that means my red blood cells can actually be given to any patient at any time, even when we don't know their blood type. And that's really important for things like trauma situations. So when you're at a hospital and you're working in a trauma center and a patient rolls in, we may not have time to figure out what their blood type is before they need a transfusion. And that's why those imaginary doctors on those TV shows scream, I need 6 units of O neg stat. And that's because O negative is what we call the universal blood donor.
Got it.
So even though O negative is pretty uncommon, as I said, only 6%, we need a whole lot of it to try and keep up with those trauma situations. So that's just one example. In terms of the second part of your question, Lillian, is there any type that's better than any others? There's been a lot of people that have studied that over the years, and a lot of back and forth about that. Some people believe that, for example, and there's some truth to some of it, I will tell you, people that are group O do have less of a tendency to form blood clots. In other words, dangerous blood clots, the kind that you hear about where people form blood clots in their legs or in their lungs, that does tend to be lower in blood group O people than blood group A or B people. And there are a few other minor differences. But aside from that, there's not really any well-known or well-characterized, you know, plus or minus to having one or the other blood types.
But it does sound like O negative especially is kind of universal. So that is a nice one to have and one that you're probably always happy to receive. I want to move on because we only have a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you, I know you have some blood drives coming up. Do you want to share some of the locations and when they are?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. In no possible way that I'll be able to go over all of them just because it would be too much. So what I would suggest to anyone who is interested to see if there's a blood drive in your area, please go to our website. Again, that's lstream.org. You can check out on our website, specifically finding drives that are in your area. Just click the donate blood icon. But I can certainly say coming up on Friday, May the 15th, we have a drive, actually two drives in Banning at San Gorgonio Hospital and at Beaver Medical Group. We have a drive in Riverside. We have another drive in San Bernardino at the Center for Youth and Community Development. The day after that, Saturday, May 16, a drive at a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Redlands, another one in Kala Mesa, and that one's at a church as well, and a church in Colton also. And then finally, on Sunday, May 17, a blood drive in Riverside at the La Sierra University Church, as well as the Water of Life Church in Fontana. And we are just so grateful, especially in these times with COVID being such an issue, for the organizations that continue to work with us. We work very, very hard, including screening our staff, making sure that our staff have normal temperatures and check them for very strongly for COVID-19 symptoms. And we do the same thing with our blood donors. Everyone is required to have face coverings. We take great care. We're wiping down surfaces, et cetera, to try and keep everyone as safe as we possibly can in this, as everyone knows, unprecedented time.
The reason I really wanted you to say some of those places is that I'm hoping that if they don't go to the website, maybe they'll be intrigued by hearing, oh, that one's close to my house. Let me go look it up. So that's the
Absolutely.
Reason I was asking for the different cities and maybe the different churches or the locations. And lastly, how can others or businesses get involved and help?
Absolutely. We certainly welcome our community partners. We welcome people that are interested in working with us. There are multiple ways to get a hold of us. Again, the website is something that's certainly very easy to contact us through. You can also contact us through a central email, which is blooddonors@lstream.org. Or further, a very simple phone number, which is 1-800-TRY-GIVING. That's 1-800-879-4484. We have a team of dedicated and very friendly and happy people who would love to work with you to try and help us fulfill our mission, which is to connect our blood donors and our patients through the amazing gift of blood.
Perfect. My guest has been Dr. Joe Chuff, and he is the Chief Medical Officer for LifeStream Blood Bank. Thank you so much for sharing the information and your passion.
Thank you, Lillian.
In addition to the San Bernardino location and headquarters, LifeStream locations in our listening area include Marina Valley, Murrieta, Ontario, and Riverside. More information for LifeStream is online at lstream.org. That's lstream.org. Next week on Inland Edition, we'll talk to first five representatives from Riverside and San Bernardino counties. Join us on Tuesday and Wednesday at 2 p.m. and 5:30 for Inland Edition. To hear this episode or past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/inlandedition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Inland Edition on your streaming service. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.